No Middle Name by Lee Child. Read by Carrie Shale. Too much time. 60 seconds in a minute. 60 minutes in an hour. 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week, 52 weeks in a year. Reacher ballparked the calculation in his head and came up with a little more than 30 million seconds in any 12-month span, during which time nearly 10 million significant crimes would be committed in the United States alone, roughly one every 3 seconds. Not rare. To see one actually take place, right in front of you, up close and personal, was not inherently unlikely. Location mattered, of course. Crime went where people went. Odds were better in the center of a city than the middle of a meadow. Reacher was in a hollowed-out town in Maine, not near a lake, not on the coast, nothing to do with lobsters. But once upon a time it had been good for something, that was clear. The streets were wide, and the buildings were brick. There was an air of long-gone prosperity. What might once have been grand boutiques were now dollar stores. But it wasn't all doom and gloom. Those dollar stores were at least doing some business. There was a coffee franchise. There were tables out. The streets were almost crowded. The weather helped. The first day of spring, and the sun was shining. Reacher turned into a street so wide it had been closed to traffic and called a plaza. There were cafe tables in front of blunt red buildings either side, and maybe 30 people meandering in the space between. Reacher first saw the scene head-on, with the people in front of him, randomly scattered. Later he realized the ones that mattered most had made a perfect shape, like a capital letter T. He was at its base, looking upward, and 40 yards in the distance, on the crossbar of the T, was a young woman, walking at right angles through his field of view, from right to left ahead of him, across the wide street, direct from one sidewalk to the other. She had a canvas tote bag hooked over her shoulder. The canvas looked to be medium weight, and it was a natural color, pale, against her dark shirt. She was maybe 20 years old, or even younger. She could have been as young as 18. She was walking slow, looking up, liking the sun on her face. Then, from the left-hand end of the crossbar, and much faster, came a kid, running, head-on, towards her. Same kind of age. Sneakers on his feet. Tight black pants. Sweatshirt with a hood on it. He grabbed the woman's bag and tore it off her shoulder. She was sent sprawling, her mouth open in some kind of a breathless exclamation. The kid in the hood tucked the bag under his arm like a football, and he jinked to his right. And he set off running down the stem of the T, directly towards Reacher at its base. Then from the right-hand end of the crossbar came two men in suits, walking the same sidewalk-to-sidewalk direction the woman had used. They were about 20 yards behind her. The crime happened right in front of them. They reacted the same way most people do. They froze for the first split second, and then they turned and watched the guy run away, and they raised their arms in a spirited but incoherent fashion, and they shouted something that might have been, "Hey!" Then they set out in pursuit. Like a starting gun had gone off. They ran hard, knees pumping, coattails flapping. Cops, Reacher thought. Had to be. Because of the unspoken unison, they hadn't even glanced at each other. Who else would react like that? 40 yards in the distance, the young woman scrambled back to her feet and ran away. The cops kept on coming. But the kid in the black sweatshirt was 10 yards ahead of them, and running much faster. They were not going to catch him, no way. Their relative numbers were negative. Now the kid was 20 yards from Reacher, dipping left, dipping right, running through the broken field. About 3 seconds away, with one obvious gap ahead of him, one clear path. Now 2 seconds away, Reacher stepped right one pace. Now 1 second away. Another step. Reacher bounced the kid off his hip and sent him down in a sliding tangle of arms and legs. The canvas bag sailed up in the air, and the kid scraped and rolled about 10 more feet. And then the men in the suits arrived and were on him. A small crowd pressed close. The canvas bag had fallen to earth about 1 yard from Reacher's feet. It had a zipper across the top, closed tight. Reacher ducked down to pick it up, but then he thought better of it. better to leave the evidence undisturbed, such as it was. He backed away a step. More onlookers gathered at his shoulder. The cops got the kid sitting up, dazed, and they cuffed his hands behind him. One cop stood guard and the other stepped over and picked up the canvas bag. It looked flat and weightless and empty, kind of collapsed, like there was nothing in it. The cop scanned the faces all around him and fixed on Reacher. He took a wallet from his hip pocket and opened it with a practiced flick. There was a photo ID behind a milky plastic window. Detective Ramsey Aaron, County Police Department. The picture was the same guy, a little younger and a lot less out of breath. Aaron said,
"Thank you very much for helping us out with that."
Reacher said,
"You're welcome."
"Did you see exactly what happened?"
"Pretty much."
"Then I'll need you to sign a witness statement."
"Did you see the victim ran away afterwards?"
"No, I didn't see that."
"She seemed okay."
"Good to know," Aaron said. "But we'll still need you to sign a statement."
"You were closer to it all than I was," Reacher said. "It happened right in front of you. Sign your own statement."
Frankly, sir, it would mean more coming from a regular person, a member of the public, I mean. Juries don't always like police testimony. Sign of the times."
Reacher said, "I was a cop once."
"Where?"
"In the army."
"Then you're even better than a regular person."
"I can't stick around for a trial," Reacher said. "I'm just passing through. I need to move on."
"There won't be a trial," Aaron said. "If we have an eyewitness on the record, who is also a military veteran with law enforcement experience, then the defense will plead it out. Simple arithmetic. Pluses and minuses, like your credit score. That's how it works now."
Reacher said nothing.
10 minutes of your time," Aaron said. "You saw what you saw. What's the worst thing could happen?"
"Okay," Reacher said.
It was longer than 10 minutes, even at first. They hung around and waited for a black and white to come haul the kid to the police station, which showed up eventually, accompanied by an EMS truck from the firehouse, to check the kid's vital signs, to pass him fit for processing, to avoid an unexplained death in custody, which all took time. But in the end, the kid went in the back seat, and the uniforms in the front, and the car drove away. The rubberneckers went back to meandering. Reacher and the two cops were left standing alone. The second cop said his name was Bush, no relation to the Bushes of Kennebunkport. Also a detective with the county. He said their car was parked on the street beyond the far corner of the plaza. He pointed, up where their intended stroll in the sun had begun. They all set out walking in that direction, up the stem of the T, then a right turn along the crossbar, the cops retracing their earlier steps, Reacher following the cops. Reacher said,
"Why did the victim run?"
Aaron said, "I guess that's something we'll have to figure out." Their car was an old Crown Vic, worn but not sagging, clean but not shiny. Reacher got in the back, which he didn't mind because it was a regular sedan. No bulletproof divider, no implications. And the best legroom of all, sitting sideways, with his back against the door, which he was happy to do because he figured the rear compartment of a cop car was very unlikely to spontaneously burst open from gentle internal pressure. He felt sure the designers would have thought of that consideration. The ride was short, to a dismal, low-built concrete structure on the edge of town. There were tall antennas and satellite dishes on its roof. It had a parking lot with three unmarked sedans and a lone black-and-white cruiser, all parked in a line, plus about 10 more empty spaces, and the stove-in wreck of a blue SUV in one far corner. Detective Bush drove in and parked in a slot marked D2. They all got out. The weak spring sun was still hanging in there. "Just so you understand," Aaron said, "the less money we put in our buildings, the more we can put in catching the bad guys. It's about priorities."
"You sound like the mayor," Reacher said.
"Good guess. It was a selectman making a speech, word for word." They went inside. The place wasn't so bad. Reacher had been in and out of government buildings all his life. Not the elegant marble palaces of D.C. necessarily, but the grimy, beat-up places where government actually happened. And the county cops were about halfway up the scale when it came to luxurious surroundings. Their main problem was a low ceiling, which was simple bad luck. Even government architects succumbed to fashion sometimes, and back when atomic was a big word, they briefly favored brutalist structures made of thick concrete, as if the 1950s public would feel reassured the forces of order were protected by apparently nuclear-resistant facilities. But whatever the reason, the bunker-like mentality too often spread inside, with cramped, airless spaces, which was the county police department's only real problem. The rest was pretty good. Basic, maybe, but a smart guy wouldn't want it much more complicated. It looked like an okay place to work. Aaron and Bush led Reacher to an interview room on a corridor parallel to the detective's pen. Reacher said, "We're not doing this at your desk." "Like on the TV shows?" Aaron said. "Not allowed. Not anymore. Not since 9/11. No unauthorized access to operational areas. You're not authorized until your name appears as a cooperating witness in an official printed file, which yours hasn't yet, obviously. Plus, our insurance works best in here. Sign of the times. If you were to slip and fall, we'd rather there was a camera in the room to prove we were nowhere near you at the time."
"Understood," Reacher said.
They went in. It was a standard facility, perhaps made even more oppressive by a compressed, hunkered-down feeling coming from the obvious thousands of tons of concrete all around. The inside face was unfinished, but painted so many times it was smooth and slick. The color was a pale government green, not helped by ecological bulbs in the fixtures. The air looked seasick. There was a large mirror on the end wall, without doubt a one-way window. Reacher sat down facing it, on the bad guy side of a crossways table, opposite Aaron and Bush, who had pads of paper and fistfuls of pens. First, Aaron warned Reacher that both audio and video recording was taking place. Then Aaron asked Reacher for his full name and his date of birth and his social security number, all of which Reacher supplied truthfully, because why not? Then Aaron asked for his current address, which started a whole big debate. Reacher said,
"No fixed abode."
Aaron said, "What does that mean?"
"What it says. It's a well-known form of words."
"You don't live anywhere?"
"I live plenty of places, one night at a time."
"Like in an RV, or are you retired?"
"No RV," Reacher said.
Aaron said, "In other words, you're homeless."
"But voluntarily."
"What does that mean?"
"I move from place to place, a day here, a day there."
"Why?"
"Because I like to."
"Like a tourist?"
"I suppose."
"Where's your luggage?"
I don't use any.
You have no stuff.
I saw a little book in a store at the airport. Apparently we're supposed to get rid of whatever doesn't bring us joy.
So you junked your stuff?
I already had no stuff. I figured that part out years ago.
Aaron stared down at his pad of paper, unsure. He said, "So what would be the best word for you? Vagrant?"
Reacher said, "Itinerant. Distributed. Transient. Episodic."
"Were you discharged from the military with any kind of diagnosis?"
"Would that hurt my credibility as a witness?"
"I told you, it's like a credit score. No fixed address is a bad thing. PTSD would be worse. Defense counsel might speculate about your potential reliability on the stand. They might knock you down a point or two."
"I was in the 110th MP, Reacher said. "I'm not scared of PTSD. PTSD is scared of me."
"What was the 110th MP?
An elite unit.
How long have you been out?
Longer than I was in.
Okay, Aaron said, but this is not my call. It's about the numbers now, pure and simple. Trials happen inside laptop computers. Special software, 10,000 simulations, the majority trend. A couple of points either way could be crucial. No fixed address isn't ideal, even without anything else.
Take it or leave it, Reacher said.
They took it, like Reacher knew they would. They could never have too much. They could always lose some of it later. Perfectly normal. Plenty of good work got wasted, even on slam-dunk successful cases. So he ran through what he had seen, carefully, coherently, completely, beginning to end, left to right, near to far. And afterwards, they all agreed that must have been about all of it. Aaron sent Bush to get the audio typed and printed, ready for Reacher's signature. Bush left the room, and Aaron said, "Thank you again."
"You're welcome again," Reacher said. "Now, tell me your interest."
"Like you saw, it happened right in front of us."
"Which I'm beginning to think is the interesting part. I mean, what were the odds? Detective Bush parked in the D2 slot, which means he's number two on the detective squad. But he drove the car, and now he's doing your fetching and carrying, which means you're number one on the detective squad, which means the two biggest names in the most glamorous division in the whole county police department just happened to be taking a stroll in the sun, 20 yards behind a girl who just happened to get robbed."
"Coincidence," Aaron said.
Reacher said, "I think you were following her."
"Why do you think that?"
"Because you don't seem to care what happened to her afterwards. Possibly because you know where she is. You know she'll be back soon to tell you all about it. Or you know where to find her, because you're blackmailing her. Or she's a double agent. Or maybe she's one of your own, working undercover. Whichever, you trust her to look out for herself. You're not worried about her. It's the bag you're interested in. She was violently robbed, but you followed the bag, not her. Maybe the bag is important, although I don't see how. It looked empty to me."
"That sounds like a real big conspiracy going on, doesn't it?"
"It was your choice of words," Reacher said. "You thanked me for my help." "My help in what, exactly? A spontaneous split-second emergency? Now, I don't think you would have used that phrase. You would have said, 'Wow, that was something, huh?' Or an equivalent, or just a raised eyebrow, as a bond, or an icebreaker, like we're just two guys shooting the shit. But instead you thanked me quite formally. You said thank you very much for helping us out with that."
Aaron said, "I was trying to be polite."
Reacher said, "But I think that kind of formality needs a longer incubation. And you said, 'With that.' With what? For you to internalize something as that, I think it would need to be a little older than a split second. It would need to be previously established. And you used a continuous tense. You said I was helping you out, which implies something ongoing, something that existed before the kid snatched the bag, and will continue afterwards. And you used the plural pronoun. You said, 'Thanks for helping us out, you and Bush,' with something you already own, with something you're already running, and it just came off the rails a little bit. but ultimately the damage wasn't too bad. I think it was that kind of help you were thanking me for, because you were extremely relieved. It could have been much worse, if the kid had gotten away, maybe. Which is why you said, thank you very much, which was way too heartfelt for a trivial mugging. It seemed more important to you.
I was being polite.
And I think my witness statement is mostly for the chief of police and the selectmen, not a computer game, to show them how it wasn't your fault, to show them how it wasn't you who just nearly screwed up some kind of a long-running operation. That's why you wanted a regular person. Any third party would do. Otherwise, all you would have is your own testimony, on your own behalf, you and Bush, watching each other's back.
We were taking a stroll.
You didn't even glance at each other. Not a second thought. You just chased after that bag. You'd been thinking about that bag all day, or all week.
Aaron didn't answer, and got no more opportunity to discuss it, because at that moment the door opened, and a different head was stuck in. It gestured Aaron out for a word. Aaron left, and the door snicked shut behind him. But before Reacher could get around to worrying about whether it was locked or not, it opened up again, and Aaron stuck his head back in and said, "The rest of the interview will be conducted by different detectives." The door closed again. Opened again. The guy who had stuck his head in the first time led the way. He had a similar guy behind him. Both looked like classic New England characters from historic black-and-white photographs, the product of many generations of hard work and stern self-denial. Both were lean and wiry, all cords and ligaments, almost gaunt. They were wearing chino pants with checked shirts under blue sport coats. They had buzzed haircuts. No attempt at style. Pure function. They said they worked for the Maine Drug Enforcement Administration, a statewide organization. They said state-level inquiries outbid county-level inquiries, hence the hijacked interview. They said they had questions about what Reacher had seen. They sat in the chairs Aaron and Bush had vacated. The one on the left said his name was Cook, and the one on the right said his name was Delaney. It looked like he was the team leader. He looked set to do all the talking. About what Reacher had seen, he said again. Nothing more. Nothing to be concerned about. But then he said,
"First, we need more information on one particular aspect. We think our county colleagues went a little light on it. They glossed right over it, perhaps understandably."
Reacher said, "Glossed over what?"
"What exactly was your state of mind, in terms of intention, at the moment you knocked the kid down?"
"Seriously?"
"In your own words."
"How many?"
"As many as you need."
"I was helping the cops."
"Nothing more?"
"I saw the crime. The perpetrator was fleeing straight towards me. He was outrunning his pursuers. I had no doubt about his guilt or innocence, so I got in his way. He wasn't even hurt bad.
How did you know the two men were cops?
First impressions. Was I right or wrong?
Delaney paused a beat. Then he said,
Now tell me what you saw.
I'm sure you were listening in the first time around.
We were,
Delaney said.
Also to your continued conversation afterwards with Detective Aaron, after Detective Bush left the room. It seems you saw more than you put in your witness statement. It seems you saw something about a long-running operation.
That was speculation, Reacher said. It didn't belong in a witness statement.
As an ethical matter?
I suppose.
Are you an ethical man, Mr. Reacher?
I do my best.
But now you can knock yourself out. The statement is done. Now you can speculate to your heart's content. What did you see?
Why ask me?
We might have a problem. You might be able to help.
How could I help?
You are a military policeman. You know how this stuff works. Big picture. What did you see?
Reacher said, I guess I saw Aaron and Bush following the girl with the bag. Some kind of surveillance operation. Surveillance of the bag, principally. When the thing happened, they ignored the girl completely. Best guess, maybe the girl was due to hand the bag off to an as-yet-unknown suspect, at a later stage, in a different place, like a delivery or a payment. Maybe it was important to eyeball the exchange itself. Maybe the unknown suspect is the last link in the chain, hence the high-status eyewitnesses, or whatever. Except the plan failed because fate intervened in the form of a random purse snatcher. Sheer bad luck. Happens to the best of us. And really no big deal. They can run it again tomorrow.
Delaney shook his head.
We're in murky waters. People like we're dealing with here. If you miss a rendezvous, you're dead to them. This thing is over.
Then I'm sorry, Reacher said, but shit happens. Best bet would be get over it.
Easy for you to say.
Not my monkeys, Reacher said. Not my circus. I'm just a guy passing by.
We need a word about that, too. How could we get a hold of you, if we needed to? Do you carry a cell phone?
No.
Then how do folks get a hold of you?
They don't.
Not even family and friends?
No family left.
No friends, either?
Not the kind you call on the phone every 5 minutes.
So who even knows where you are?
I do, Reacher said. That's enough.
You sure?
I haven't needed rescuing yet.
Delaney nodded, said,
Let's go back to what you saw.
What part?
All of it. Maybe it ain't over yet. Could there be another interpretation?
Anything's possible, Reacher said.
What kind of thing would be possible?
I used to get paid for this kind of discussion.
We could trade you a cup of county coffee.
Deal, Reacher said. Black, no sugar.
Cook went to get it, and when he got back, Reacher took a sip and said,
Thank you. But on balance, I think it was probably just a random event.
Delaney said,
Use your imagination.
Reacher said, Use yours.
Okay,
Delaney said.
Let's assume Aaron and Bush didn't know where or when or who or how, but eventually they were expecting to see the bag transferred into someone else's custody.
Reacher said,
Okay, let's assume.
And maybe that's exactly what they saw, just a little earlier than anticipated.
Anything's possible, Reacher said again.
We have to assume secrecy and clandestine measures on the bad guy's part. Maybe they gave a decoy rendezvous and planned to snatch the bag along the way. For the sake of surprise and unpredictability, which is always the best way to beat surveillance. Maybe it was even rehearsed. According to you, the girl gave it up pretty easily. You said she went down on her butt, and then she sprang back up and ran away.
Reacher nodded, which means you would say the kid in the black sweatshirt was the unknown suspect. You would say he was due to receive the bag all along.
Delaney nodded.
And we got him, and therefore the operation was, in fact, a total success.
Easy for you to say. Also very convenient.
Delaney didn't answer. Reacher asked,
Where's the kid now? Delaney pointed to the door.
2 rooms away. We're taking him to Bangor's soon.
Is he talking?
Not so far. He's being a good little soldier.
Unless he isn't a soldier at all.
We think he is, and we think he'll talk when he comes to appreciate the full extent of his jeopardy.
One other major problem, Reacher said.
Which is?
The bag looked empty to me. What kind of a delivery or a payment would that be? You won't get a conviction for following an empty bag around.
The bag wasn't empty, Delaney said. At least not originally.
What was in it?
We'll get to that. But first we need to loop back around to what I asked you at the very beginning to make sure about your state of mind.
I was helping the cops.
Were you?
You worried about liability. If I was a civilian rendering assistance, I get the same immunity law enforcement gets. Plus the kid wasn't hurt anyway. A couple of bruises, maybe. Maybe a scrape on his knee. No problem. Unless you got some really weird judges here.
Our judges are okay when they understand the context.
What else could the context be? I witnessed a felony. There was a clear desire on the part of the police department to apprehend the perpetrator. I helped them. Are you saying you've got an issue with that?
Delaney said, "Would you excuse us for a moment?"
Reacher didn't answer. Cook and Delaney got up and shuffled out from behind the Crossways table. They stepped to the door and left the room. The door snicked shut behind them. This time, Reacher was pretty sure it locked. He glanced at the mirror, saw nothing but his reflection, gray tinged with green. 10 minutes of your time. What's the worst thing could happen? Nothing happened. Not for 3 long minutes. Then Cook and Delaney came back in. They sat down again, Cook on the left and Delaney on the right. Delaney said,
"You claim you were rendering assistance to law enforcement."
Reacher said, "Correct."
"Would you like to revisit that statement?"
"No."
"Are you sure?"
"Aren't you?"
"No,"
Delaney said. "Why not?"
"We think the truth was very different."
"How so?"
"We think you were taking the bag from the kid, the same way he took it from the girl. We think you were a second surprising and unpredictable cutout."
"The bag fell on the ground."
"We have witnesses who saw you bend down to pick it up."
"I thought better of it. I left it there. Aaron picked it up."
Delaney nodded. "And by then it was empty."
"Want to search my pockets?"
"We think you extracted the contents of the bag and handed them off to someone in the crowd."
"What?"
"If you were a second cutout, why wouldn't there be a third?"
"Bullshit," Reacher said.
Delaney said, "Jack Nunn Reacher, you are under arrest for felonious involvement with a racketeer-influenced corrupt organization. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to the presence of an attorney before further questioning. If you cannot afford an attorney, then one will be appointed for you on the taxpayer's dime."
4 county cops came in, 3 with handguns drawn, and the 4th with a shotgun held at port arms across his body. Across the table, Cook and Delaney merely peeled back their lapels to show off Glock 17s in shoulder holsters. Reacher sat still. 6 against 1. Too many. Dumb odds. Plus nervous tension in the air. Plus trigger fingers. Plus a completely unknown level of training, expertise, and experience. Mistakes might be made. Reacher sat still. He said, "I want the public defender." After that, he said nothing at all. They handcuffed his wrists behind his back and led him out to the corridor and around 2 dogleg corners and through a locked steel door in a concrete frame into the station's holding area, which was a miniature cell block with 3 empty billets on a narrow corridor, all the far side of a booking table that was currently unoccupied. One of the county cops holstered his weapon and stepped around. Reacher's handcuffs were removed. He gave up his passport, his ATM card, his toothbrush, $70 in bills, 75 cents in quarters, and his shoelaces. In exchange, he got a shove in the back and sole occupancy of the first cell in line.
The door clanged shut, and the lock tripped like a hammer hitting a railroad spike. The cops looked in for a second more, like people at the zoo, and then they about turned and walked back, past the booking table and out of the room, one after the other. Reacher heard the steel door close after the last of them. He heard it lock. He waited. He was good at waiting. He was a patient man. He had nowhere to go and all the time in the world to get there. He sat on the bed, which was a cast concrete structure, as was a little desk with an integral stool. The stool had a little round pad, made of the same thin vinyl-covered foam as the mattress on the bed. The toilet was steel, with a dished-in top to act as a basin. Cold water only. Like the world's lousiest motel room, further stripped back to the unavoidable minimum requirements and then reduced in size to the barely bearable. The old-time architects had used even more concrete than elsewhere, as if prisoners trying to escape might exert more force than atom bombs. Reacher kept track of time in his head. 2 hours ticked by, and part of a third, and then the youngest of the county uniforms came by for a status check. He looked in the bars and said, "You okay?"
"I'm fine," Reacher said. "A little hungry, maybe. It's past lunchtime."
"There's a problem with that."
"Is the chef out sick?"
"We don't have a chef. We send out. To the diner down the block? Lunch is authorized up to $4, but that's the county rate. You're a state prisoner. We don't know what they pay for lunch."
"More, I hope."
"But we need to know for sure. Otherwise, we could get stuck with it."
"Doesn't Delaney know? Or Cook?"
"They left. They took their other suspect back to their HQ in Bangor."
"How much do you spend on dinner?"
"$6.50.
"Breakfast?"
"Oh, you won't be here for breakfast. You're a state prisoner, like the other guy. They'll come get you tonight."
An hour later, the young cop came back again with a grilled cheese sandwich and a foam cup of Coke. $3 and change. Apparently, Detective Aaron had said if the state paid less than that, he would cover the difference personally.
"Tell him thanks," Reacher said, "and tell him to be careful. One favor for another."
"Careful about what?"
"Which mast he nails his colors to."
"What does that mean?"
"Either he'll understand or he won't."
"You're saying you didn't do it?"
Reacher smiled.
"I guess you heard that before."
The young cop nodded.
"Everyone says it. None of you ever did a damn thing. It's what we expect."
Then the guy walked away, and Reacher ate his meal and went back to waiting. Another 2 hours later, the young cop came back for the third time. He said,
"The public defender is here. She's going through the case on the phone with the state guys. They're still in Bangor. They're talking right now. She'll be with you soon."
Reacher said. What's she like?
Oh, she's okay. One time my car got stole, and she helped me out with the insurance company. She was in my sister's class in high school.
How old is your sister?
3 years older than me.
And how old are you?
24.
Did you get your money back for your car?
Some of it.
Then the guy went and sat on the stool behind the booking table, to give the impression of proper prisoner care, Reacher supposed, while his lawyer was in the house. Reacher stayed where he was, on the bed, just waiting. 30 minutes later, the lawyer came in. She said hello to the cop at the desk, in a friendly way, like a person would to an old high school classmate's kid brother. Then she said something else, lawyer-like and quietly, about client confidentiality, and the guy got up and left the room. He closed the steel door behind him. The cell block went quiet. The lawyer looked in the bars at Reacher, like a person at the zoo, maybe at the gorilla house. She was medium height and medium weight, and she was wearing a black skirt suit. She had short brown hair with lighter streaks, and brown eyes and a round face with a downturned mouth, like an upside-down smile, as if she had suffered many disappointments in her life. She was carrying a leather briefcase too fat to zip. There was a yellow legal pad poking out the top. It was covered with handwritten notes. She left the briefcase on the floor and went back and dragged the stool out from behind the booking table. She positioned it outside Reacher's cage and climbed up on it, and got comfortable, with her knees pressed tight together and the heels of her shoes hooked over the rail. Like a regular client meeting, one person either side of a desk or a table, except there was no desk or table, just a wall of thick steel bars, closely spaced. She said,
"My name is Kathy Clark."
Reacher said nothing. She said,
"I'm sorry I took so long to get here. I had a closing scheduled."
Reacher said, "You do real estate, too?"
"Most of the time."
"How many criminal cases have you done?"
"One or two."
"There's a large percentage difference between one and two. How many exactly?"
"One."
"Did you win?"
"No."
Reacher said nothing.
She said, "You get who you get. That's how it works. There's a list. I was at the top today, like the cab line at the airport."
"Why aren't we doing this in a conference room?" She didn't answer. Reacher got the impression she liked the bars. He got the impression she liked the separation, as if it made her safer. He said, "Do you think I'm guilty?"
"Doesn't matter what I think. It matters what I can do."
"Which is?"
"Let's talk," she said. "You need to explain why you were there."
"I have to be somewhere. They need to explain why I would have given up my co-conspirator. I delivered him right to them."
"They think you were clumsy. You intended merely to grab the bag, and you knocked him over by mistake. They think he intended to keep on running."
"Why were county detectives involved in a state operation?"
"Budgets," she said. "Also sharing the credit to keep everyone sweet."
"I didn't grab the bag."
"They have 4 witnesses who say you bent down to it."
Reacher said nothing.
She said, "Why were you there?"
"There were 30 people in that plaza. Why were any of them there?"
"The evidence shows the boy ran straight towards you, not towards them."
"Didn't happen that way. I stepped into his path."
"Exactly."
"You think I'm guilty?"
"Doesn't matter what I think," she said again.
"What do they claim was in the bag?"
"They're not saying yet."
"Is that legal? Shouldn't I know what I'm accused of?"
"I think it's legal for the time being."
"You think? I need more than that."
"If you want a different lawyer, go right ahead and pay for one,"
Reacher said. "Is the kid in the sweatshirt talking yet?"
"He claims it was a simple robbery. He claims he thought the girl was using the bag as a purse. He claims he was hoping to get cash and credit cards, maybe a cell phone. The state agents see that as a rehearsed cover story, just in case."
"Why do they think I didn't run, too? Why would I stick around afterwards?"
"Same thing," she said. "A rehearsed cover story. As soon as it all went wrong, you saw them grab your pal, So you both switched to Plan B instantly. He was a mugger. You were helping law enforcement. He would get a trivial sentence. You would get a pat on the head. They anticipate a certain level of sophistication from both of you. Apparently, this is a big deal.
Reacher nodded. How big of a deal, do you think?
It's a major investigation. It's been running a long time.
Expensive, do you think?
I imagine so.
At a time when budgets seem to be an issue.
Budgets are always an issue.
As are egos and reputations and performance reviews. Think about Delaney and Cook. Put yourself in their shoes. A long-running and expensive investigation falls apart due to random chance. They're back to square one, maybe worse than that. Maybe there's no way back in. Lots of red faces all around. So what happens next?
Well, I don't know.
Human nature, Reacher said. First, they shouted and cussed and punched the wall. Then, their survival instinct kicked in. They looked for ways to cover their ass. They looked for ways to claim the operation was in fact a success all along. Agent Delaney said exactly that. They dreamed up the idea the kid was a part of the scam. Then, they listened in when Aaron was talking to me. They heard me say, I don't live anywhere, I'm a vagrant, in Aaron's own words, which gave them an even better idea. They could make it a twofer. They could claim they bagged two guys and ripped the heart out of the whole damn thing. They could get pats on the back and letters of commendation after all.
You're saying their case is invented?
I know it is.
That's a stretch.
They double-checked with me. They made sure. They confirmed I don't carry a cell phone. They confirmed no one keeps track of where I am. They confirmed I'm the perfect patsy.
You agreed with the idea the kid was more than a mugger.
As a hypothetical, Reacher said, and not very enthusiastically. Part of a professional discussion. They flattered me into it. They said I know how this stuff works. I was humoring them. They were making shit up to cover their ass. I was being polite, I guess.
You said it was possible.
Why would I say that if I was involved?
They think it was a double bluff.
I'm not that smart, Reacher said.
They think you are. You were in an elite MP unit.
Wouldn't that put me on their side?
The lawyer said nothing, just squirmed on her stool a little. Uneasiness, Reacher figured. Lack of sympathy. Distrust. Even revulsion, maybe. A desire to get away. Human nature. He knew how this stuff worked. He said,
check the timing on the tape. They heard me say I have no address, and the mental cogs started turning, and pretty soon after that, they had hijacked the interview and were in the room with me. Then they left again later, just for a minute, for a private chat. They were confirming with each other whether they had enough, whether they could make it work. They decided to go for it. They came back in and arrested me.
I can't take that to court.
What can you take?
Nothing, she said. Best I can do is try for a plea bargain.
Are you serious?
Completely. You're going to be charged with a very serious offense. They're going to present a working theory to the court, and they're going to back it up with eyewitness testimony from regular Maine folk, all of whom are either literally or figuratively friends and neighbors of the jury members. You're an outsider with an incomprehensible lifestyle. I mean, where are you even from?
Nowhere in particular.
Where were you born?
West Berlin.
Are you German?
No. My father was a Marine, born in New Hampshire. West Berlin was his duty station at the time.
So you've always been military?
Man and boy.
Not good. People thank you for your service, but deep down, they think you're all screwed up with trauma. There's a substantial risk you'll be convicted, and if you are, you'll get a long custodial sentence. It'll be far safer to plead guilty to a lesser offense. You'd be saving them the time and expense of a contested trial. That counts for a lot. It could be the difference between 5 years and 20. As your lawyer, I would be delinquent in my duty if I didn't recommend it.
You're recommending I do 5 years for an offense I didn't commit.
Everyone says they're innocent. Juries know that.
And lawyers?
Clients lie all the time.
Reacher said nothing.
His lawyer said, they want to move you to Warren tonight.
What's in Warren?
The state pen.
Oh, terrific.
I petitioned to have you kept here a day or two, more convenient for me.
And?
They refused.
Reacher said nothing.
His lawyer said, they'll bring you back tomorrow morning for the arraignment. The courthouse is in this building.
So, I'm going there and back in less than 12 hours. That's not very efficient. I should stay here.
You're in the system now. That's how it works. Nothing will make sense ever again. Get used to it. We'll discuss your plea in the morning. I suggest you think about it very seriously overnight.
What about bail?
How much can you pay?
About $70 and change.
The court would regard that as an insult, she said. Better not to apply at all.
Then she slid down off her stool and picked up her overstuffed bag and walked out of the room. Reacher heard the steel door open and close. The cell block went quiet again. 10 minutes of your time. What's the worst thing could happen?
Another hour went by, and then the young cop came back in. He said the state had authorized the same $6.50 for dinner that the county would have spent. He said that would get most anything on the diner's menu. He recited a list of possibilities, which was extensive. Reacher thought about it for a moment. Chicken pot pie, maybe. Or pasta. Or an egg salad. He mused out loud between those three. The cop recommended the chicken pie. He said it was good. Reacher took his word for it. Plus coffee, he added. Lots of it, he emphasized. A really serious quantity. In a flask, to keep it warm. With the proper china cup and saucer. No cream, no sugar. The cop wrote it all down on a slip of paper with the stub of a pencil. Then he said,
was the public defender okay?
Sure, Reacher said. She seemed a nice lady. Smart, too. She figures it's all a bit of a misunderstanding. She figures those state guys get a bit overenthusiastic from time to time. Not like you county people. No common sense.
The cop nodded.
I guess it can be like that sometimes.
She says I'll be out tomorrow, most likely. She says I should sit tight and trust the system.
That's usually the best way,
the kid said.
He tucked the slip of paper in his shirt pocket, and then he left the room. Reacher stayed on his bed. He waited. He sensed the building grow quieter as the day watch went home and the night watch came in. Fewer people. Budgets. A rural county in an underpopulated part of the state. Then eventually the young cop came back with the food. His last duty of the day, almost certainly. He was carrying a tray with a china plate, with a metal cover, and a white fluted fat-bellied plastic coffee flask, and a saucer topped with an upside-down cup, and a knife and a fork wrapped in a paper napkin. The plastic flask was the key component. It made the whole assemblage too tall to fit through the horizontal pass-through slot in the bars.
The kid couldn't lay the flask down on its side on the tray. It would roll around, and the coffee would spill out all over the pie. He couldn't pass it upright on its own through a regular part of the bars, because they were too close together for its fat-bellied shape. The kid paused, unsure. 24 years old, a rookie. A guy who knew Reacher as nothing worse than a placid old man who spent all his time on his bed, apparently relaxed and resigned. No shouting, no yelling, no complaints, no bad temper. Trusting the system. No danger. He would balance the tray one-handed on steepled fingers, like a regular waiter. He would take his keys off his belt. He would unlock the gate and slide it open.